News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. People sometimes ask me, Pete, what do you do in your downtime? Like, what do you have any hobbies and stuff? And like, and so I tell them, I say, yes, like, for example, during commercial breaks, I fight with leftists on Twitter. That's what I do. It's just, I have fun doing it. And people are like, oh, you get so angry or whatever. Like, ah, that's not true at all. I'm not angry at all when I have these things. Like, does a dog get angry at the bone? Is the cat angry at the mouse? No, they're playing with it. Right. So that's how I, like, for example, no, if you want a good time, you want to see some of the fights, you just follow me on the Twitter machine. That's where it happens. Just a heads up here. John Sexton, hotair.com. Democracy is not in crisis just because Democrats are losing. I just feel like that needs to be said. There are a lot of people very hysterical. Okay. Democracy is not in crisis just because Democrats are losing. Okay. It's just a public service announcement. I'm a giver. All right, so we do have Charlie now. Let me go over here. I can never see the phone. Oh, there we go. Sorry, the laptop lights shut off, and then I have a hard time reading the numbers because there's no backlit number. Anyway, the first world problems I have to deal with here. Charlie Mulligan, running for State Senate District 41. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you, Pete?
I am doing all right. So I was taking a look at your Facebook page. Do you know, like, your Charlie for Mech? It's very close to, like, Charlotte Mech. Do you know that? Charmech? Like, very close. Is there something there? Like, can we do something with that from a marketing standpoint?
I think we can make that happen. I mean, if you can get your Equinox cookies, then we can make Charmech happen.
Right. See, now, if you would like to help with that effort as well, maybe head over to Twitter and, like, kind of prop that up for me on Kentori's tweets. I don't know if he reads them a lot, but, like, I think if we could show a movement, that might be helpful. All right, so let me ask you, Senate District 41. Do you know the boundaries of the 41? Do we know what they are at this point?
Yeah.
So, oh, okay.
So it's going to be Matthew, Mint Hill, Ballantyne, and then basically the lower South Park area up to about Fairview.
The lower South, is this like LOSP? The LOSP? Is this going to get its own branding, its own area?
Yeah, I don't know. We're really stretching here today. I'm going to probably retire at branding. But yes, just south of South Park.
Just south of South Park. Okay. So so this area, it's not completely a new area for a Senate district, obviously. And this is the area, if I recall correctly, is this the one that Rachel Hunt is in? Is this the one she represents right now?
That's right. Rachel Hunt is planning to run on the Democratic side of
okay.
the state.
Is it? Do you know what the numbers look like from a partisan standpoint? I know that's unconstitutional, but are we allowed to look at this? Like, can we see? Like, does this favor a Republican or a Democrat more so than the other?
Well, as a candidate who is interested in his chances of winning, I have in fact looked that up. It's really a 50-50 race. Okay. Jeff Jackson. It's part of Jeff Jackson's old seat. It's part of the Andrea Salvador seat. Which have both won and run by Democrats. But the way that it's drawn right now, it's about a D+2. So okay. It's Democrat favoring, but certainly could be won by either party.
Well, yeah, and if we just prevent everybody on the Democrat side from voting, as we are known to do, then it becomes way easier, obviously. so you say in the your Facebook page, by the way, people can look you up on Facebook, which is facebook.com/CharlieForMech. And so I got to ask you, because you say that you've got some ideas and you want a new direction. You've got a common sense platform for South Mech. And that is scary to the Democratic establishment. So what is the common sense platform for South Mecklenburg?
Well, I think you have to take a look at, you know, we've had about a decade now, uninterrupted, where the Democrats have been able to run everything, right? We've got pretty much everybody in the NC House and the NC Senate is a Democrat. City Council, majority Democrats. County Commission is currently 100% Democrats. So yeah, I mean, my common sense really takes a look at the kind of what that has gotten us, because I think it's fair to say they've had a chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got more than half of our students in CMS are not proficient at math. It's like 49% proficient, and then about 30-something in reading. And that was before the pandemic, and so in 2018. After the pandemic, those test scores dropped 30% from that. So schools aren't doing well. We've got, I think, more than 10,000 cases backlogged right now in Mecklenburg County courts.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got people who are having their, in my opinion, their Sixth and Eighth Amendment rights violated. And, of course, since we've got overflowing jails and kind of a dipping our toes into the old defund the police waters here and there, we've got, you know, pretty much the elimination of cash bail, which is what people who have, you know, committed crimes or stand accused of committing crimes being released, and guess what? Committing more crimes. So,
like city council members. Yeah, like city council members. Oh, I'm kidding.
Perhaps,
I kid.
I'm staying out of that one. But yeah, you know, 2020 was a murder record. They just released the numbers from 2021, and they're all excited because we were just short of the record this time.
Yeah.
We didn't set a new one, which is great news.
Right. We weren't as bad as we were in the recordly bad year prior. So we didn't surpass our worst number.
Right. And then we're not even really, when it comes to SouthMEC, we're not really bringing home the bacon, so to speak. You know, when it comes to the House and Senate members, they should be investing in their districts. And it really seems to me that the current representation that we have, they're much more interested in angling for a gig with the Biden administration or getting plaudits from national Democrats. And they're just not coming through for this district. Great example. I'm sure you heard about this, Pete, but we basically lost half of our funding for roads, half of our planned funding from the state for road improvements in the 2020 budget. Well, there's nobody up there representing SouthMEC in the room with the people who lead the General Assembly to prevent that from happening. And if you've been to the south side of the county, my gosh, do we need improvements when it comes to our roads? You know, so these are the types of things that it's not, I don't think any of this should be controversial. And I'm tired of losing to Democrats, so that's why I'm running.
Right. So politics, I've said this for years, politics is about relationships. And if you can't, like you said, even be in the room to have a conversation to try to get stuff. And I've talked to state lawmakers. And when there was, like, for example, and he told me this in an interview, I'm not speaking out of turn. This was Representative Jason Sane. And one of his colleagues, a Democrat, came to him and asked him, hey, can you work with us on this police body cam bill that they wanted to tweak? They wanted to change something, whatever, and or get some money maybe for body cams. I forget specifically, but it was about cop cams. And Sane worked with this Black Democratic member in the House. And he said, look, like, we both have the same aim here. There's no reason why we can't work together on these things where we agree. And if you can't even do that, then you're not an effective representative for your constituents. And it doesn't matter if you're left or right. If you're in the minority party, you got to be able to forge a coalition with certain members of the majority party. That's just a truism across the board.
Yeah, and it's gotten so toxic, frankly. You know, so many of our members, including my future opponent, have just spent so much time catcalling our Republican General Assembly and name calling that it's almost impossible at this point to get Raleigh to, you know, help us here in Charlotte. And there's lots of investments that need to be made. We've got plenty of overcrowding problems. We've got a housing crisis. Like I said, we've got roads that need improvements. And it's like, my experience has been talking to people in SouthMEC, whether that's Matthews, Mint Hill, Ballantyne, whatever, they just feel left out. They feel taken advantage of and taken for granted, right? This is the majority of the tax base for Charlotte and for a good portion of Mecklenburg County's tax base. And they're like, well, you're fine, right? And that's just, that's unacceptable, in my opinion. And I think, you know, I have on my website, not only can we do better, we deserve better. And that's really, you know, a big core of what I'm running on. My slogan is expect more. So,
see, and the website is?
CharlieForMac.com.
There you go. See, so when you said
that's
website.
The word for, not the number.
Not the number, right. So that's right. So like I know, like, is this your first run for office, by the way?
It is, yeah.
Okay. So anytime you say website, you got to say the website name. So just keep that in mind.
You're right.
You got to plug that. You got to plug that. Your campaign managers will get really mad at you if you don't. So charlieformeck.com is the website. You can learn more about Charlie Mulligan. Thanks for your time, Charlie. We'll touch base with you again, I'm sure, during the campaign season. And best of luck on the campaign trail.
Thanks, Pete. Stay safe this weekend.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT, Pete Callender. Email Pete at thepetecallendershow.com, 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. Democracy is not in crisis just because Democrats are losing. Everywhere you look, Democrats are warning about the threat to democracy currently posed by Donald Trump or the GOP or some combination of the two. John Sexton, writing at hotair.com, says the panic seems omnipresent. The message from left-wing media literally boils down to this. Unapologetically side with the Democrats because anything less is tantamount to abandoning democracy. Fellow progressive Greg Sargent wrote a piece. He writes the Plumb Line, I believe, right? Greg Sargent, Washington Post guy. He wrote a piece about the horror show of Republicans winning state elections. How dare you win? He's writing about a new report that's circulating among Democrats, which say that they need to do a better job of tying Republicans to Trump and extremism. In case you couldn't tell, that's what they're doing. That's why you keep seeing all of the same messaging in the media and in the one of the. I will say this. If you could put up with the spam in your inbox, you really should go and sign up for some of the Democratic Party press releases. You can get on their mailing list, like literally just go to their website for any candidate. They all run off of the same, you know, Act Blue or whatever. They all run off of the same platform. And so you just give them an email address. You can create one. And then you'll start seeing all of the press releases, all their statements they put out. And they're all the same. They're all the same. The language they use, the arguments they use, the appeals for fundraising, right? It's all the same. And they are reflected, the language, the phrasing, it's all reflected in the media reports as well. It's all the same. So that's why this, voting rights legislation, that's why that gets adopted as the descriptor of what that bill is, even though it's not what that bill is. The use of the democracy, it's simplistic. It's juvenile. It's childish. It is. Your branding sucks, guys. It does. Oh, and by the way, only a third of Americans actually think it's too difficult to vote. One third. That's it. Two thirds don't agree. So you're talking to a very small group of people that already agree with you. This is the fight I'm having with this moonbat on Twitter, some leftist who thinks that the way to best express and channel his impotent rage is to direct it at the unvaccinated and to scream at them to get vaccinated. Well, are you trying to actually get them vaccinated? Because yelling at people and telling them that they're the reason why other people are dead, that doesn't actually persuade them. So what is it you're trying to do? What's the objective, right? So I'm a big fan of asking that question. What's the objective? And when you start thinking in terms of identifying the objective and then how do you achieve the objective, you start realizing how much of the stuff on the left is simply performative, right? That's all it is. And that's what this guy is doing. He's just simply screaming on Twitter in order to perform for his audience of like 7 followers. That's it. It's not actually about, you know, trying to get people vaccinated because he believes it'll save their lives. Because if you do believe that, then yelling at them and calling them all sorts of names doesn't actually advance your cause. It doesn't get you closer to your objective. There was a Morning Consult poll that came out. Share of U.S. adults who say the rules around voting are too difficult, not strict enough, or don't know. And among all adults, 33% say too difficult. 44% say are not strict enough. 44%. So the top votainer in the poll is not strict enough. That's the majority view. So you defenders of democracy, right? All you perimeter guards on the front lines of democracy protection. You guys are all about making sure that if the majority views something that should be done, then we should do it, right? Well, the majority says not strict enough, which is what state legislatures have been doing. Why? Because you guys sued and used courts to unwind election integrity measures. You made the rules more lenient. You allowed for abuses to occur because of COVID. Then, when the legislatures came back and said, okay, well, let's not do that again, and they shored up their rules, now you accuse them of being Bull Connor. Segregationist, racisty, racist. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Happy Friday. Yeah, so the morning consult poll, this was conducted September 17th through the 20th. 2021. So look, maybe people's opinions have changed. Maybe Democrats have moved the needle with all of the coverage and pushing of the voting rights legislation and how Republicans are stealing our ability to vote by making sure that elections aren't stolen. But anyway, most U.S. adults believe that voting rules are not strict enough. 44% of all adults say that. 33% say that voting rules are too difficult, make it too difficult for eligible citizens to vote. And then 23% don't have an opinion or don't know. So now when you look at the party breakdown, Democrats, 54% of Democrats say it make that the rules make it too difficult for eligible citizens to vote. This gets to one of those things. This is such a condescending, arrogant mindset. They look at people as if they are infants, unable to get a voter ID, get a driver's license, right? They look at people as like incapable of filling out a paper ballot, of getting to a polling station, of asking for an absentee ballot, of following the rules, of reading, right? They see this as like this huge impediment. Independents, by the way, 29% say that the rules are make it too difficult. Only 29% of independents. 37% don't know. 35% say that the rules are not strict enough. 79% of Republicans say they're not strict enough. All of the data shows that the Republicans actually have the winning position on this stuff. Maybe that's why we see some of the hysterical reporting and Democrat narrative crafting. Now, I do find this kind of funny. A lot of the Never Trump or GOPers that were very, very confused by Joe Biden's actions and his words over the last few days about this election nationalization bill, right? They were very confused, almost as confused as like Joe Biden appears at like every press conference. No, I'm kidding. Like he doesn't do those press conferences. Actually, he says, they say that he's now going to do one on Wednesday. He's going to do one on Wednesday, everybody. I think it's his sixth one. I know. RB Pundit on Twitter said that, look, these folks, these Never Trumper Republicans, guys like Jonah Goldberg and Matt Lewis, Stephen Hayes, they are conditioned to lose. They have a role to play, and their income is dependent upon them playing that role. Okay. And for some of them, that may be true. Now, I can still read them. I don't know. Like I can understand that people have different views on Donald Trump and this, and I can read people's work and make my own assessments. I follow a lot of different people. I interact with a lot of different people and I can read their work, and it doesn't, you know, fill me with the fury and fire of a million burning suns. Like it doesn't do that to me. Like I can read Matt Lewis at the Daily Beast, where he says, Joe Biden's mandate, okay, he doesn't say it like that, but it does kind of give off that vibe. Joe Biden's mandate was to restore the norms and work across the aisle to heal the country's toxic political culture. Yeah, that's what it was. In other words, to not be Donald Trump, is what he says. This past week demonstrated how he has failed to live up to that promise. In particular, his speech in Atlanta serves as a microcosm for a disappointing year of leadership that has cratered his popularity. The president compared opponents of changing the filibuster rules in order to pass the Democratic voting rights bills, again, the election nationalization bills. He equated us to notorious racists like Bull Connor, George Wallace, and Jefferson Davis. In so doing, Biden is appropriating Trump's method of otherizing adversaries and casting political opponents as enemies of the people and human scum. They got very offended. They were very upset at this rhetoric that Biden used. And by the way, like, I found it to be completely inappropriate as well. But here's the thing. I knew who Joe Biden was. Do you think I just quoted Biden? They're going to put you back in chains. Do you think I just quoted that for no reason whatsoever? That's what Biden told an audience of black voters in order to convince them that Republicans were racist. So no, I'm not surprised to learn that Joe Biden is using racism in order to divide and using race to divide people. Calling people racist is kind of what Joe Biden does. Ironically, from a guy who used to pal around with the actual racist segregationist Klans people. Right? Well, Klansmen, but I don't want to assign gender because I don't know what their pronouns were back then. Okay, so he says he attacked Mitt Romney. They're very upset about this. He attacked Mitt Romney, of all people. Again, not surprising because he said Romney wanted to put black people back in chains. So not surprising to me, but apparently surprising to the people that are paid to observe politics, paid a lot of money to observe politics. This was surprising to them that Biden attacked Mitt Romney because Romney didn't like the tone of the and being called a Bull Connor racist. Right. So he attacks Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, who was like the only Republican to stand up against Donald Trump in the Senate, like the first Republican ever, the first member of the Senate to ever vote for impeachment of a president of his own party, that Mitt Romney. He's the Bull Connor, Jefferson Davis racist. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right, Biden. Go yell at some more clouds. That's the Rolling Stones. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. So Matt Lewis. And I got a piece here by Jonah Goldberg as well, and Peggy Noonan, and, well, David Arsani, but he was never Trumper. But they're all just shocked. I can't believe Joe Biden would do such a thing. Like, Peggy Noonan said that the president's speech in Atlanta was a disaster. She said he may have thought he was just crooning to part of his base, but the repercussions were greater than that. He was breaking in some new other... He was breaking in some new way with others and didn't know it. I don't know what that means. Anyway, it is poor political practice, she says, when you fail to guess the effects of your actions. He meant to mollify an important constituency, but instead he filled his opponents with honest indignation and, I suspect, encouraged in that fractured group some new unity. The speech was aggressive, intemperate, not only offensive, but meant to offend. It seemed prepared by people who think there's only the Democratic Party in America. That is, everybody else is an outsider who can be disparaged. Well, that is what they think, by the way. Yes. It was a mistake on so many levels. Presidents, more than any others in politics, have to maintain an even strain, as astronauts used to say. If a president is rhetorically manipulative and divisive on a voting rights bill, it undercuts what he's trying to establish the next day on COVID or the economy. The over-the-top language of the speech made him seem more emotional and less competent. Back to Matt Lewis, who says, in the wake of Trump's presidency, it seems counterintuitive to give the federal government more authority over elections. Right, almost as if there's some sort of a different motivation there, Matt. What do you think it could be? Imagine a scenario where a president, like Donald Trump, for example. Right, where Trump has more leverage over how elections are conducted and state leaders have less. Think this is a slippery slope argument? Yes, it is. But if the goal is to address the weaknesses in our system that Trump exposed, the idea of federalizing elections is a step in the wrong direction. But this is always the case with statists and authoritarians. Everything is in service to that end. These things that you hear them arguing are simply transient. They're short-term arguments, necessary right now to make It's sort of like the it's the argument about like Second Amendment versus police brutality, right? This was always one of the irony arguments that the left makes. On the one hand, they say, like, or, you know, Donald Trump, or, you know, all the police, they're all terrible. They're trying to, you know, murder minorities in the streets and all this stuff. But we should not be allowed to arm ourselves from those tyrants, right? The same people that are telling us that the entire country is being taken over by white supremacists at any given moment do not want us armed, do not want us to arm ourselves against these efforts. It doesn't make any sense. Unless, of course, you recognize that these are all just short-term arguments in service to the long-term goal of more state control, right? Okay, imagine a scenario where Trump's got more power, state lawmakers and officials have less, right? Again, it's Matt Lewis. He's so close. He's so close to grasping the point here, right? It's almost as if they're not arguing in good faith. The fact that Biden cannot persuade 50 Democrats to get rid of the filibuster just demonstrates that his primary legislative obstacle is not Republicans. It's his inability to persuade his own caucus. That was Matt Lewis's piece at the Daily Beast. And Jonah Goldberg at the Dispatch. He quotes Biden's inaugural address, which, he talked about, we can join forces, stop the shouting, lower the temperature, stop the shouting. This guy, this president now, says stop the shouting. Like, he totally, like, he lifted Obama's lines, because of course he did. He's Joe Biden. Plagiarism is kind of his jam. I joke, but it's true. Okay, so, but he totally used Obama's no red states, no blue states, just the United States, right? That was a unifying message, and that's what Biden tapped into as well to try, and it was successful. People believed it. People like Jonah Goldberg, people like Matt Lewis, people like Peggy Noonan, they believed him. I didn't, but they did. And they were like, oh, he's going to be empathetic. He's a uniter. He's an empathetic uniter. Look at him unify us empathetically. And now they're shocked that Joe Biden is Joe Biden. I, for one, am not. But they are. They are. To listen to Biden and Harris, Kamala Harris, and Chuck Schumer, and most Democrats, and a whole bunch of journalists, what changed in 1 year from the unifying empathy talk to everyone's Bull Connor and Jefferson Davis? What happened is that now there's an existential threat to democracy. Voter suppression. This is a plague now sweeping the land. It literally threatens to end democracy in America. Their argument is very, very weak. It is shameful. It is demagogic. It is ahistorical garbage. Okay? There have been rule changes, law changes, in the wake of the COVID changes. There have also been changes that have made it easier to vote. 62 laws made it easier to vote. 33, according to the Brennan Center, made it harder. Now, not all these are equal, right? All restrictions, all voting laws are not created equal. But many of the laws were put in place first because of the pandemic, and then some of them were tweaked afterwards. Now, a reasonable person can argue that all of the COVID rules should have been made permanent, right? You can make that argument, I guess, but a reasonable person cannot plausibly argue that returning our voting practices to the rules that were in effect in 2018, when Democrats had sweeping victories, that going back to those rules, that's proof that the democracy is on the cusp of being eliminated? That anybody who supports the status quo ante of 2018, that they're now the Confederates of the modern day? Because you support the rules that were in place when Democrats cleaned up. This is what I mean. This is so stupid. It's such an infantile argument. It doesn't even really deserve a legitimate response. It deserves ridicule. It deserves to be mocked. And that's why guys like yesterday's caller, Jack, was very concerned and very upset that, you know, you really shouldn't make fun of the way he talks. Francis Collins. Because, as Alinsky taught the leftist organizers that they utilize to this day, and now the right does as well, because, as I've said, you're not going to like it when we all play by your rules, that Ridicule is the most potent form of argument that you can use against an individual. Pick the target, freeze it, ridicule them. It puts them off balance, gets them arguing about the insults and that sort of stuff, and it makes people laugh at them. And boy, do they hate getting laughed at. Oh my gosh, they're so used to laughing at others. They're really not prepared when folks start laughing at them. Anyway, that's a wrap for the episode. We'll see you, maybe Sunday. If not Sunday, Monday. Have a great weekend. Brett Winterbull coming up next. Don't break anything while I'm gone.